Hello, welcome to episode 9. It might be German for no, but you'll want to say yes to this episode. I'm David Jeffrey, and with my co-host Paul Ahrens, we'll be using this podcast to explore the weird and wonderful world of Amdram, the highs, the lows, and everything in between. We'll be speaking to people from all across the country, from groups of all shapes and sizes, finding out what makes them tick and why we put so much time and effort into entertaining the public. In this episode, we're joined by Joe Rendell and Jude Downing from Progressive Players, based in Gateshead. Progressive Players was set up in the 1920s as part of the local independent Labour Party branch, and we also have very close links to Little Theatre Gateshead, rumoured to be the only theatre set up during World War II. By three sisters, Ruth, Sylvia and Hope Dobbs. In this episode, we talk about the difference between Amdram and theatre, bussing in audiences and ghost hunting after rehearsals. If you enjoy the show, please do leave us a rating through your podcast app so we get recommended to other podcast listeners. And share this show with anyone you think might be interested. So, curtains up and on with the show. Well, thank you, Joe and Jude, for joining us tonight. If you could tell us a little bit about your group's name to begin with. So, Progressive Players, what does that mean?
Progressive Players are the resident amateur company in the little theatre at Gateshead. They've been around since 1920. There's two separate companies, Progressive Players and the little theatre, but basically made up of the same people. We've got our we have our own theatre, and so the little theatre Gateshead kind of look after the building and do hires out, and we are members of the Progressive Players, so we do the productions in the little theatre.
It was founded by, was it three sisters, Jo?
Three Dodds sisters, yeah.
So, I mean, it was probably a big thing for women to do back there then. They were originally in a different building running the Progressive Players, and then bought two houses. Did they buy them both straight away, Jo?
It offers two, and then they added another one in the 80s. So the theatre building itself is made out of some Victorian, quite large Victorian terraced houses, Progressive Players, as I said, have been going since 1920. They started off performing in local church halls, and then because that they really needed a proper theatre building, so these three local groundbreaking sisters, the Dodds, Ruth, Sylvia, and Hope, sort of basically funded the purchase of these houses to be converted into the theatre. They did that. They started the building in 1939, and then unfortunately World War II got in the way, so that delayed things a bit. One of the houses was actually requisitioned as a barrage balloon station, so that stop the build from going ahead. However, they did manage to get the theatre build finished, and we believe that it's the only theatre to have been opened during the war. It opened in 1943, all at the three Dodds sisters were really groundbreaking, I suppose, in getting this this all done, and I think remained pretty much running the theatre until their deaths in the 70s. So they're well known in Gateshead for other things as well, but getting the theatre off the ground is a major thing for them. So there's blue plaques to them around Gateshead. There's one on the theatre, I think, isn't there, Jude?
I think so, yeah.
It was divided into two companies in the 40s as well, basically so the Progressive Players could get on with putting on plays, and so the little theatre Gateshead would look after the building. So that's kind of how it's been set up. But the little theatre Gateshead board is made up of members of the Progressive Players, so they're linked.
Okay, what do you think, Paul, about using our group as a shell company to buy property across Liverpool?
I would worry that we don't have enough money to buy a shell, let alone a shell company.
I don't think that would happen now. And they are both charities, so...
Oh, fair enough. So, Ruth, Sylvia and Hope, then, where did they get their money from if they were just buying houses left, right and centre?
I think they were from a local moneyed family.
Okay.
I don't actually know what the family did, though, do you, Joe?
Well, I think they were descendants of Joseph Swan, who's another big Gateshead figure, I think, was involved in inventing light bulbs and stuff like that. So I think, you know, they were none of them married, so they had a bit of cash to
burn on Andra.
So, yeah. So thank you, the Dodd sisters. So, but I think they were involved in, you know, quite a lot of, you know, sort of benevolent work in the area as well. Don't want to, you know, mock it or anything. So, you know, and they just got most of the money together to get the theatre built. So
excellent.
If
any rich benefactors out there are listening and want to support an Amdram group, you know, Walton Drama Group is always happy to take money, be it cash transfers, brown envelopes, whatever.
I keep telling you, David, no.
The other thing I should mention, the Progressive Players started as a, it's entirely non-political now, but it did start as part of the drama group for the Independent Labour group in Gateshead. So they were very much about doing plays that had like a social message and stuff to them. And the Dodd sisters were very much kind of involved in, doing that kind of beneficial work. Although I think we're not politically orientated at all now. That's not how we choose our place. So.
Yeah, you can see that by looking at the plays we've done, that there's no political drive there.
No. So
what is the group like now then? So how many members do you have? What level do you pitch yourself at?
We have 150 members currently. We do 10 plays a year. I suppose we're really lucky that we've got our own theatre building, so we're able to do that. We do a range of different plays, from classic drama, murder mystery. Murder mysteries go down really well with our audience. I would say we're quite traditional in our choice of material. I don't know what you think about that, Jude.
Yeah, we're not going to do anything that's going to shock anybody.
Yeah. We have a loyal audience. We have a lot of season ticket members who basically, you know, pay for 9 plays and just get to see 10. So there's very much a desire to kind of keep them keep them doing things that they're going to want to come and continue to want to come and see. So
a lot of them have their own seat, obviously, and not so much me because I'm quite a new member, but I know that people will say, oh yes, you know, the guy that always sits in the front row on a Wednesday, and I'm like, who's that? Who does that? And, you know, but it's nice to see them, and there's quite a few people arrive on the bring coaches from different areas, so that they're big coaches, aren't they, Joe, that come on the...
Yeah, Tuesday night, season ticket holders in the coach, so...
So you're literally bussing audience members in.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very much like, you know, we've got the arena in Newcastle. It's kind of Gateshead's equivalent of the arena.
Yeah. With 187 seats.
Yeah.
There's going to be people listening who are hearing, you know, you've got your own theatre, you've got 150 members, you do 10 plays a year and you literally bus audiences in. And they're going to be very, very jealous right now because I know I am.
We're very much at the other end of the scale, aren't we, David?
Yeah. I mean, we appreciate how lucky we are, you know, as well, to be, you know, be in that situation. It's not every night we bus audiences in.
Well, we can barely bike them in.
Yeah.
we'll send
them over to Liverpool.
We have time when we'll have a waiting list for tickets for plays because they'll sell out. And what, I mean, we run it something crazy like, is it 80%?
Yeah.
That's really good. That's really good.
Yeah.
Wow. Can I ask with regards to the doing 10 plays a year, are you, do the group rehearse one play, finish that play and move on to the next one and do that 10, or are you rehearsing multiple plays at the same time throughout the year?
There's always an overlap. So you've got one play. So, well, actually, they'll have somebody that's sort of starting to read. They'll have the play that's on stage. And as soon as they're finished on stage, the next play then can move in and start rehearsing on stage and getting there. It's about 3 weeks, isn't it, on stage?
3 or 4 weeks, yeah.
And then so it's like a conveyor belt. And then the next play will go into the rehearsal area and we'll sort of...
And do people tend to do just one play at a time, or do you can people get involved in a couple of the plays at the same time, or is that just too much? Is there too much conflict? Well,
there's people that will have an overlap. I've never done that. Have you done that, Joel? Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Generally, you're not encouraged to go into another play, you know, when you're in one that's rehearsing.
Yeah.
However, you know, with 150 members and 10 plays a year, sometimes there is, you know, the need to do that. Mm. And there are, there are people that are more
involved.
Some people, like, for instance, men in the 30s and 40s are probably going to be, you know, get more. Mm. Be more required for different roles. So sometimes that happens, but generally,
well, give it 2 years and I'll be moving up to Gateshead then.
Me too.
It actually works really well because you've got some people who are really technically handy and they want nothing to do with being on stage. And then you've got people who aren't handy at all. You know, they're not going to be building sets. They're not going to be doing lights and sound, but they love to come along and they might do the tickets, or they might just sell the ice creams, or they might be behind the bar or selling the teas and coffees. They don't want to be on stage. But then we've got people who will be on stage, but most people will do offstage things as well. You know, somebody might be leading lady in one show and the next time they're doing props. And that, you know, people do all the jobs. It's a fantastic team.
So there is, like, new members are really encouraged to get involved in doing things straight away. We run Monday to Saturday in our show weeks, so we've also got to get the front of house team together as well as cast and crew. So, you know, you might join one week and you're selling coffees the next, and then you're doing props, and then you've got a part to a couple of weeks later. So it's that kind of place where, you know, you don't have to wait ages if you want to be involved.
Yeah.
So
what are your average ticket prices then?
Top ticket prices are £9.
And so you can do,
so that's
you
for say a
you get pay for nine and you get a 10th show three on your season
no
pass.
You would have to buy a season ticket separate. That would be if you were just coming along to see a show. Nine. But if the season tickets are different prices, and a lot of our season ticket holders get concessions anyway, so we have full price and then concession prices and then the season ticket prices as well. So I mean, I think £9 is pretty good. You know, you pay more to go to the pictures, wouldn't you? So
And our cornfields are much cheaper than the cinema as well.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly if you're in a theatre, like, I think we've always found that, you know, we are probably we're about £6 or £7 at the minute for our shows. I think we went up to £8 for one.
But
I think we felt it was getting a bit much because we're basically just in a church hall. I think if you're an Amdram group in a theatre, I think you can definitely, your price point can go up.
Yeah.
I think £9 is actually very good for performing in a theatre. I think if you go to see any show in a theatre these days, I think it's about 15-20 quid, isn't it? So,
I mean, I know the other amateur theatre in Newcastle, and they're a much bigger theatre than us. They charge over, you know, over £10. So, but yeah, so I think being under a tenner is, and you know, for concessions, I think doing pretty well there. So,
Have you seen the inside of the theatre? We'll have to try and get some pictures over, because it is, it's absolutely glorious. It's just beautiful. The you've got proper red velvet seats, and the colouring and the huge curtains and everything. You know, it is absolutely a little theatre. It's not, you know, it's not a hall that we've put chairs in. It's absolutely a little theatre. So we're very proud of that. And I think when people come, they've had a night at a theatre. And they like that, because we've got the bar area and we've got a separate area that we do teas and coffees. So it feels like a night out.
Yeah, it makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sort of thing.
And people come back again, 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 don't they? People come and see all the plays in the season. So, we have got that really loyal audience. So,
with your 10 plays a year then, such a high frequency, how big is your committee?
Committee is, just time to think, chair, secretary, treasurer, three. We've got five co-opted members, eight, and then four vote. Is it four or five voted on?
Can't remember.
So not, no, you see, like, not particularly large for such a high.
Yeah, it's,
volume,
I think it's 11
activity.
Or 12 for the actual committee that run the progressive players, and then the Little Theatre Gates would have their own board as well. I think there's not sure how many, definitely a chair, treasurer and a secretary, and then some others as well. Yeah. So seven or eight, I think, on, yeah. So the two groups, probably less than 20.
Do you give your directors quite a large kind of remit, or does the committee have a lot of oversight, a lot of say in how the shows are done?
Oh, no, the directors literally the hand over, and the director can pretty much, as long as they do the bits that need to be done, they've got a free hand, really, haven't they, Joe?
Yeah, for the directors of the play, there is the way we select the plays, we have a reading subcommittee, who puts lists of plays to the management committee, and we've got a production committee who do the casting as well. So they vote on what goes into the season. So, you know, if you want to be involved in choosing what plays get done, then you need to get on one of those committees so you get a vote. But once directors are chosen, it's basically down. They can do what they want, really. Yeah. So I guess no one's ever really done anything, tried to do anything too radical, but I don't know whether management would step in if they thought it wasn't appropriate or okay. I don't know. Yeah.
That's interesting, having a separate committee to cast the plays away from the director. Yeah. That would be quite good. I think I always find it's one of the most difficult things when you direct an amateur show, is having to cast the show initially.
We do cast it. The director casts the show.
Oh, okay.
But with the help of the production committee.
Ah, right. Okay.
But
I
it's
see.
Down to the director ultimately who they.
Okay.
Who they pick, and the production committee kind of assist and suggest people, because we don't have auditions.
You don't have auditions.
We don't have auditions now.
Well, not as such. Because I've only joined a year gone January, and what happens is, and I was quite surprised, I didn't know what to expect, but we have a reading, a play reading. So when there's a new play going to be start production, the director will organise a play reading, and you go along. So you do sit around and read. So obviously they can hear, you know, especially if you're somebody new and they don't know who you are. So there, it's not an audition, but you get to hear how people sound. And, you know, you can ask them to try different parts and things. But then you might have people that have put their name in. It's a really interesting process, the way it's worked. So we have tins, you know, like the charity tins that you pop your money in the top. We have one of those for each plea. And if you're interested in being involved, you would put a slip of paper in with your name in and what you're interested in doing. So, you know, if you thought, I definitely don't want to be on stage in this one, but I would like to do props, or I would like to do wardrobe, or, you know, get involved in whatever level. Or I suppose if there's a specific part that your heart was set on, you would put that you want that. But normally I think people just put on, you know, either on stage or props or something like that. So after you've done the play reading, so you don't know whose names are in there. So you might be sitting there at the reading and thinking, oh, she'd be brilliant at that, or he'd be excellent in that role. And then you open the tin and they haven't put the name in because they've just come along to the play reading to support the event. And then you'll go through and kind of go, oh, yes, there's that name. Oh, yeah, they'd be really good at this. And that's how it's cast. So,
names in the tin is the Amdram version of Keys in a Bowl.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you'd probably better with the egg.
But it was going so well as well.
It was. Well, I was thinking though, Paul, when you were saying about how that was, you know, no directorial choice over who's cast, and you sounded quite impressed, but that does not sound like your approach to directing at all, relinquishing any power whatsoever.
Well, yeah, this is true. I do have, you know, a bit of a control freaky streak to me, but I think casting, there are times I quite happily abdicate that responsibility to somebody else. And just let someone else cast the play, and then go, here you go, here's your cast, get on with it.
I mean, it's definitely the director.
I wouldn't be happy if it wasn't the cast I wanted.
Yeah. It is definitely the director that has the, you know, the say on who gets picked. But sometimes there's no name in the tin for a particular part. And then the production committee get on the, well, they'll talk to the director first and say, who do you want? And then suggest people, and then they'll get on the phone to try and get someone. And occasionally there's been situations where there's been disagreements between production committee and director about who should be cast. If there's someone the production committee think is suitable, but the director doesn't want them, then, you know, I mean, ultimately it's the director's decision, but it can occasionally cause a few...
be difficult if you're in a show that's already running or is due to run.
Yeah,
and then a show's being cast, and so the director wants someone who's in a show that's already, or you want to do another show. I feel like that's you've kind of got to plan your year. How early in advance are your plays kind of planned? Do you plan it like a whole year, or is it done like
we plan five plays a season of five plays, so that's. What that season's going to be is known sort of 6 months ahead. Okay. And then they have to find the directors. Mm-hmm. So you would then ask for volunteers for directors and hopefully get five people who want to direct. So sometimes get people in competition with each other, and then production committee vote on who gets it. It's basically it's six months ahead.
If you look at the plays that are coming up and you think, I'd really like to be in that one that's fourth along, but I'd quite like to be the one that's third along, well, you're going to have to choose really. And, you know, wait and go, right, okay, I'll wait for the fourth one. And because it wouldn't be cast by the time that, you know, they wouldn't be casting that one until the other one had been cast. So,
yeah. Okay. So you don't cast them all at the same time. You're casting them as you go along. Okay.
No.
But there's a group quite close to us in the Wirral who they think they do four or five shows a year, but they cast them all in February or something. They just cast all the shows for the whole year, and then they go on and do their year. But
that sounds like a great idea in theory, but things happen in people's lives, don't
they? No, it's exactly like you're casting a show and you're not going to be on stage for another 10 months or something. They notoriously have dropouts and are looking for people afterwards, but that's just how they work. I was wondering if you were similar, but if you're casting as you go along, that I think that makes more sense, to be honest.
Yeah.
So what would you say has been your group's greatest achievement?
I just think turning out the 10 plays a year.
Sounds absolutely correct.
Yeah. And also the fact we've been going for so long,
This year should have been our, well, this year is our centenary year. So we had all sorts of exciting things planned. So we planned a play from every, well, from loads of decades, you know, that we've done before. And obviously going to be totally different so many years later. And then that all stopped because there's a bit of a virus going around. Yeah.
Two of the centenary season played in January and February. So we did Pygmalion and She Stoops to Conquer, which were done by us in the 20s and 30s. So, and then we had to stop, obviously. So who knows?
So are you just going to do them all for 2021? Is that the hope?
I think that's the general idea, but it depends a lot. I mean, some of the players we picked have got really big casts. So with having quite a small stage, whether we could actually do them if there's still social distancing in place. Who knows?
We were 1 week away from being on stage with the next play when everything had to close. So, I mean, at the time, we were discussing, thinking we'd be back on stage sort of, well, we're talking about October, weren't we?
Yeah.
Obviously, that ain't going to happen now. And we'd organised... we're quite a long way down the line with performing three excerpts from different plays in the local park, because we're directly opposite a huge park called Saltwell Park, and we were going to do these three plays there in the bandstand, but then you know we've got stronger. We've got stronger restrictions at the moment because of a spike in infection. So that had to be called off as well. Should that have been this weekend?
Next weekend.
So that was quite sad.
Yeah, we're in the same position. We've just gone into a stronger local lockdown in Liverpool. It's the way it goes. We were hoping, I think, a few months ago to hopefully do our Christmas panto, but you know, it's obviously not going to happen now. It will be an Easter panto.
I
don't know when we're going to get in and start rehearsing, but I mean,
yeah. Well, yeah, let's be. There's the balance, though, isn't it, between being optimistic and making plans for the future you can look forward to, and also being realistic that this could just be a. And also, how do you do a panto when things like singing are going to be restricted because it's obviously very dangerous?
Spoken word panto, hockey. Absolutely not. If Shatner can do it, so can we.
Maybe. Well, what about? I know what you could do. Just pre-record the songs and mine.
Lip sync
yeah, if it's good enough for RuPaul's Drag Race. But I think with our cast, we don't even want to pre-record. We'll just use the recorded originals from actual singers.
And pretend to singing,
especially if you're messing around and missing your cue and things like that, or getting the wrong one if you've got a male and a female, you know, like on Singing in the Rain, when do you remember the bit at the end of Singing in the Rain when she's pretending to sing and it's actually the girl behind, and then Gene Kelly comes, oh no, it's not, it's Donald O'Connor, isn't it? And he's singing and she's going, what's going on? See, what a brilliant panto. Who needs actual singing?
That's often what our audience say. No actual singing, please. And actually, they've said for years that our cast would look better in a mask, so now they might get the wish now.
Yeah.
So do you do musicals, or is it straight plays?
No, we don't do musicals. Sadly,
occasionally plays with music, but
yeah, we did. Well, the last play that it was the last play that you and I did together, wasn't it, Lady? Today and it had a lot of the tracks from Tony Christie in it, and a nice finale to Show Me the Way to Amarillo. Well, there was a bit of singing there, but it wasn't really singing. It was singing a lot.
The flip side of my last question then, what do you reckon has been your group's biggest mistake or biggest issue that you've had?
difficult to say that. Well, I was going to say it's difficult to say that without getting sort of political in a theatre style. I think it's a difficult balancing act that we've got to do, because we've got such a loyal audience of more mature patrons. And then we try to do things that would bring in new people. And it is a balancing act, isn't it? So like Pygmalion's great because kind of everybody knows it. So that seemed to have quite a cross section. But there are other plays that are very much going to appeal to the older audience, who are our loyalist demographic. And I think it's probably more of a challenge than a mistake, but it's trying to get that right, to get new people and still keep, not have them all going, I'm not coming back here, blow me off, where they've let themselves go, you know. And that was just Joe leaving.
I think we're doing 10 plays a year. We could take a few more risks. We could do a few more, you know, edgy plays, but still do the murder mysteries and the, you know, the stuff that they love. I mean, I'm certainly a proponent of that within the theatre, but, you know, sometimes you feel like you're not everybody's on the same side. There's certainly people that were like that. I think we are very lucky to have what we've got, and we could take a few more risks, and I think we could be a more diverse membership and get a more diverse audience in. And you know, we do need to do that as well as appealing to the older demographic. We need to start getting, you know, younger people in as well. So that's, you know, I think we should consider that more.
Sorry, I think we should do, it would be good if we did something that appealed to a family audience.
Yeah.
Something very...
No, it's not for a family. I'd really like to do Cooking with Elvis by Lee Hall, who's a local writer, and obviously a really famous writer as well. So, but it's quite rude. So I've tried to get it through a reading committee before, but it's funny. So, and I think the audience would love it, but maybe in a few years' time. So.
Well, you can always come down to Liverpool and do it, because we don't have a reading committee, and we're just happy for people who want to direct.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Any director brings us a play, then we're like, yep, that'll do.
Okay, right. I'll pop along. So, I can move it into, okay, it could be with Scouse accents instead of Geordie ones. I think the other thing is we don't always, because we're so busy doing 10 plays a year, we don't always have the chance to sort of reflect on what we do well and what we could improve, you know, things on. So, but if we are, however long we're closed for, you know, hopefully that will be the chance to do some of that and get some positives out of being closed as well. So,
because we only do three shows a year, shows a year. And For us, you know, we're quite traditional in the sense that our Christmas show will be a pantomime, because that makes us, that gives us a profit usually, and then it allows our Easter and summer shows to be basically what somebody in the group wants to do, and we're not really ever too restrictive on what those shows could be, but it is easy to just retreat into a comfort zone. And I mean, there's pros and cons. I mean, people who like pantos will always come and audition for a panto. And for some people like me, to be honest, I'd be quite happy doing three pantos a year. But then if in our case, anyway, we're not blessed with 150 members. And if you want to keep it interesting and get new people in, then sometimes you do need to mix up what you're offering. Yeah, it's a tricky tightrope to walk.
Yeah, we need to do some proper theatre occasionally, David. You can't just spend the whole year shouting at the audience.
How many members do you have?
Well, our membership is straight. We don't have members in a kind of set sense. We have people who are involved in the group and involved in plays, but we typically, like, if we're casting a show of 20 people, say, we'll be able to get 20 people, but... we don't have a central membership list, as it were, so we're a bit more fluid like that.
The emails that we send out probably go out to about 100 people.
No, they go out to a bit more, 230.
Wow.
I mean, they're not open by 230 people.
No, that's the thing. I'm not sure everyone's opening them, but no. Yeah, but spam. I think we've probably got between 20 and 30 people that we could probably call on if necessary, and we'd expect to be in like at least one show every year.
Yeah.
So you know, it can be difficult if you want to get 20 people involved in your show, and you think you've only got about 20 to 30 people, and it can be a bit tight at times casting the show. But then you'll do a show with like a cast of about six and suddenly about 30 people come and audition for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
We did Blythe Spirit last year, and I've never seen so many people at the audition. And you got a cast of about, I think, seven, I think it is. And I think, yeah, it was ridiculous. It's like, where were you lot like 6 months ago when we were casting the Panto?
So what would you say? I mean, I always ask this, and then people always say COVID, so you know, if you don't say COVID, that would be great for me, but you know, what do you think your group's biggest challenge will be over the next 5 years? If I was asking you this before COVID, what would you have said?
I think younger audience, getting new audience. So we've actually got quite a widespread demographic of members. It's just the audience that is predominantly older. I mean, it's helping the fact that we've got so many younger people in the membership. So if you've got them and if they're in the play, and they tend to, you know, they'll have big groups of family and friends that will come along to see it, and a lot of them will come back again and again and see plays that their family members aren't in after that, once they've seen it. And most people who come into the theatre, didn't expect it to be anything like this. Have a wonderful evening.
Yeah, I think definitely a more diverse and younger audience, but without obviously driving away our current loyal audience, and just surviving into a second century, really, and going on in the spirit of the Dodd sisters. And there's loads of issues with COVID, obviously, that, you know, making sure people come back, you know, making sure members want to come back. So that's going to last for at least 5 years. So,
Yeah, you're right. Making sure I was saying when we were talking about relaunching our group, it's not just about being able to rehearse in a COVID secure kind of environment. It's also being in a position where people feel comfortable to come and see the plays that you've spent a lot of time and effort kind of putting together. And there's nothing worse than performing to an empty audience. And if people are too worried to come out, then there's not massively much point.
I know I'm not ready to start booking tickets to go and see things. You know, I want to, but I just, you know, it just seems too risky at the moment. So
I think it's great that a lot of places are doing different things. Like I saw something came up on Facebook the other day, a drive-in show. You know, there's quite a few things like that, and setting up actual socially distant blocks that people can sit in for outdoor shows and things. So it's great. I think COVID's brought out the best and the worst in people. It's like Christmas, you know. So you've got people that are rallying and are just looking for ways around it, and then you've got people that just want to argue all day.
Yeah.
So I think the progressive players need to start exploring what, you know, if we can't open in the same way as we always have done for a while, then what else can we do? You know, we obviously had a go at doing theatre in the park. Unfortunately, that didn't happen this year. But, you know, what other things are there? Which I guess that's a challenge for all theatres, isn't it? So,
And I think you're right about younger audiences as well. I don't think that's just specific to you guys. I mean, it's a bit like, there's something about Andram. It's a bit like the National Trust. It just seems quite like, for young people, it's not something you'd ever consider was for you. It's always, you know, something for slightly older people. And I say this as someone who joined the group when I was like 14. So, you know, I remember trying to tell my convinced some friends to come along after I'd been in the group for a few months. And at first they were just like, oh, it just sounds a bit stuffy. And yeah. I don't know what it is about Amdram, but because like I say, you know, people can be doing really like kind of out there things that do appeal to younger people and things that aren't specifically aimed at young people, but appeal to everybody. Things that are just like good plays that everybody enjoys. But it's got a bit of an image problem, I think, when it comes to...
I think we actually rarely refer to it as Amdram, do we?
What do you call it?
But it's tend to be the theatre group or the theatre, you know, it's you know, when I'm... Because I think, for me, there are a lot of people that... Not that it shouldn't be taken seriously because people have paid money to come and see it, but I think Joel's the same as me. I want everybody that's involved in it to be loving what they're doing. It's not a job. It's you know, we're doing it voluntary as a hobby, and it's got to have that joy about it. So it's normally the theatre and the theatre, and it's a theatre group, and so maybe you need to just rebrand yourselves. Stop using Amdram and call it theatre group.
We haven't got a theatre though.
Church hall group
sounds significantly worse than Amdram.
But saying that, I don't even say theatre. I'd never describe any of our shows as theatre. And I don't, and that's not my weekly bash Bolton drama group. That's just, I just wouldn't. I always say, like, you know, I'm going to drama tonight. And I'd say it's Amdram. But
I would say with our group, there's much more drama than there is theatre. That's mostly off stage, though.
So do you guys have a stage in the...
We have a stage. There's a stage, there's a curtain, there's a stage, there's wings. So it's a proper stage. There's a lighting rig.
Right.
It's not huge, but it's better than some that we've worked on. So it's a good little stage. We plan to on there. So we have like the stage extensions that we put out, which brings it out a bit. It's got kind of everything you'd want, but it's more the decor of the hall. If you're in the hall, certainly if you're trying to create some kind of like suspenseful theatre, like I said, we did Blythe Spirit last year, and you're in a church hall. It's got huge, great stained glass windows at the back. So if you're doing a show in the summer, you can't get any darkness into the hall at all because there's no way of covering them up. So you basically just got a light hall the whole time. So we did Blythe Spirit in April. We just about got away with it because by the time you had the scenes in like the dark, when it was dark, the sun had just about gone down and you had just about a dark hall. But there's we did Midsummer Night's Dream in the summer, and it was just light. It's just a big light hall, and you've got kids' drawings on one wall, and you've got other stuff and like pictures of kids on, and it just feels like a church hall.
We can have total darkness. We actually have quite a popular we're quite popular with the local ghost hunting groups.
Oh, right.
So they hire it quite regularly, don't they? And I know it was Halloween, wasn't it, last year? And we'd just been doing what was it called, the Ruth Ellis show?
The Thrill of Love.
Ruth Ellis story. So, and the stage set was fantastic, and it had the noose and, you know, a very sort of eerie look to it. And after we'd been to see the show, we're heading out, and there was this group of ghost hunters waiting in one of the rooms, and they said, "Oh, are you a member?" I said, "Oh yeah, yeah." And they said, "So have you ever seen any ghosts?" And I was like, "No, I haven't seen anything like that." And they said, and then one of their members came back into the room and went, "Oh, I've just been into the auditorium. Who's in there?" And I said, "I don't know. I'm here. I don't know who's in there." And he said, "It's in total darkness." And I said, "Oh, well, there won't be anybody in. There wouldn't be anybody walking around in total darkness." I'm like, "Oh, all right, okay. Well, I've just seen a ghost then." I was like, "Shut up!" But come with us and we'll show you. Come and have a look. And I was like, "Yeah, all right then." So we went in and they closed the curtains behind us and we stepped in. And there's the three of us, and they went, watch the stage. So there was a tiny little bit of light coming into the stage where there's this noose hanging, and, you know, it was just very eerie. And went, watch, and you'll see something just move across the stage. So I'm standing in the pretty much, you know, in the total darkness, just, and I'm looking, this guy's looking like this, and I can feel his head moving. He went, did you see that? And I went, no. And he went, look. No. And he said, I tell you what, we'll move forward. So we're going to be moving into more blackness. And I went, no, I'll just take your word for it.
I've never heard that story before.
And I was like, no, I don't want any part of this. But, so because it's such an old building, and, you know, there's obviously all sorts of stories going about it and things. So.
Yeah, I've never seen anything.
No.
So, there's stuff on YouTube about the little theatre with orbs and stuff floating around, and I've heard stories about tables moving on.
I've never seen a ghost in Walton Drama Group, but I've seen a few people die on stage.
Plenty of corpsing.
The only spirits we've got are in the bar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As they should be. Exactly where they should be.
Yeah, we put out the fantastic, what was it? Was it called Ghost Story? The Christmas?
Oh, the, I can't remember. The Haunting.
The Haunting, that was it.
Yeah.
A Dickens ghost story. And the director of that, I mean, the set was just out of this world, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was amazing. And all of the special effects, because it was all sorts of special effects, books flying off, bookcases and wind and rain and ghosts, yeah, and all sorts. It was amazing.
It was so much fun. I was on the stage management team, so it was so much fun being involved in that, doing all the effects. So
yeah, I could imagine.
And making doors open and stuff, and the audience reaction was great. So
I screamed at least three times.
Yeah.
But the director didn't want to use any pre-recorded sound effects. They were all made, so it was all old equipment, wasn't it? Like thunder and things. It was amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I truly can't imagine any professional, you know, professional as opposed to us, Amdram people, making a better job of it. It was out of this world.
Yeah.
Out of this world.
Did you hear that, Paul? Stage management team.
Oh, I know.
One person panicking backstage.
There's usually one, but there were three of us, so because there was so much to do, so I was kind of learning how to be a stage manager. So,
we're into the point where we do the concluding questions. So these are quick fire questions.
Okay,
we'll go in order. So, what tips would you give someone who wanted to start their own Amdram group?
Do it.
Plan
and do it. That's very optimistic.
Yeah.
What play or musical would you love to do that you haven't yet done? So, Joe, you've said one already, haven't you?
Cooking with Elvis.
Jude?
Well, I've only been a member for a year, so I haven't been involved. But The Importance of Being Earnest.
Oh, cracking choice.
Yeah.
Classic.
Mm. I think most groups tend to do that every couple of years, don't they? I'm sure if you're doing 10 shows a year, that's going to come up sooner or later.
We did it in 2006 or 2005.
Oh, it's well due a revival.
I was Cecily, so.
Yeah, it's well.
Yeah, I'm too old. I might get Lady Bracknell.
I'll fight you for Lady Bracknell.
Me too.
Also, I was too old when I did it.
And finally, could you sum up what Amdram or voluntary theatre means to you in three words?
Lots of fun.
Oh yeah, I like that. Joy, buzz, magic.
Brilliant. Well, Jude, Joe, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, that's episode 9. Thanks again to Jude and Joe for joining us. If you like the show, please subscribe, share the show on your social media, and leave us a review. It will help our show reach more people. If you didn't like it, tell us why. We're new to this and we love to learn. All comments are welcome, including constructive criticism. We're on Facebook as Amateur Hour, the Amdram Podcast,
Twitter as @AmDramPodcast. We have a website, waltondramagroup.co.uk/amateur hour, or you can email us at waltondramagroup@hotmail.co.uk, and we'll put all of that in the show notes as well. We'd also like to thank our group sponsor, Armadillo Storage South Liverpool, and we'd really recommend them to you if you need to store things somewhere that isn't your home or anywhere else. Thanks for listening.